United States Supreme Court has issued an opinion on former President Trump's ballot eligibility. Let's bring in Kelly Meyer with the very latest and how the high court ruled. Kelly.
Yeah, hey, Marnie. Well, they really were waiting up until the 11th hour. Voters in Colorado go to the polls starting tomorrow on Super Tuesday, as Alina was just mentioning there. But this is something that we were out here about a little over 3 weeks ago when they were here with these oral arguments. And it seemed then that the justices were skeptical of Colorado Supreme Court decision to remove Trump from the ballot. Now, it's interesting that Trump's name is already printed on that ballot when voters go to the polls there tomorrow. It was printed off in early January. But this is something that they have reversed now, these justices. And this was something that former President Trump was pushing for. We heard from him that day when they heard the oral arguments. And he was feeling positive that the conservative-leaning court was going to support him in what he believes would have disenfranchised, as he said, millions of voters and could have had a flooding into other states, potentially, with what this decision held. So here we're seeing the justices reverse this decision in Colorado. This means that Trump will be on the ballot there in Colorado tomorrow. A significant decision here from the Supreme Court today, and something I'm sure that we'll be hearing from former President Trump here any moment now, where he will be celebrating likely this decision here today.
All right, Kelly Meyer in Washington. Thank you. Thank you for watching. Go to News Nation now.
What's up, Patriots? What's going on? It is Monday, March 4th, 2024. Happy to be with you. We got a whole lot to talk about in a short time to do it. Let me introduce the godfather of conservative radio, Mr. Hutch Bailey Jr. What's up, Hutch?
Hi, Wayne, Jason, and ladies and gentlemen, just glad to be here, ready to make this happen.
What you got on your wall, man?
On which side? This side? Or this side?
Yeah.
This side. Yeah. That's Alphonse and Don Corleone.
Don Corleone.
Oh.
You're right. Let me also introduce Mr. Jason Robinson from Muslim Soda. What's up, Jason?
Hutch Wayne audience, thanks for tuning in, folks. Now, I know that's a big number.
Wait, huh? Oh, nine. Yeah.
9-0, baby.
Many of you don't or haven't heard by now, the court came down 9-0 judgment, unanimous. Basically, it was a slap down of, in my opinion, it was a slap down of why Joe Brady is up here in the first place.
It was a DUI checkpoint.
Yes.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was like, okay. What's next? You know, I'm like
the big one.
Yeah, the immunity one.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know what? For some reason, there's so many of them.
Well, we do have that 1512 case coming up for the January 6th guy too. That'll be big, and the district court ruled on that on Friday.
Yeah. Are you guys the same as me when you see these decisions and things like that that favor us? Do you like refuse to be happy because you're scared?
You know what? This morning, that's how I felt this morning. I was like, okay, I'm going to post this. But I was like, I mean, for me, I was looking at the bottom of that thing. And I don't know if this was for Trump, but this could have been for somebody else. Did y'all read the bottom of that thing?
I read all 20 pages.
It said, let me see. It said, I don't know why it would say this, but because the Constitution makes Congress rather than the states responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates. And then they say we reverse. I'm like, how would they, are they saying if Congress can do it? Because if that's the case, you get an all Democratic Congress up there, Democrats and Republicans, I mean, not Democrats and Republicans. If you get a fully unified uniparty up there, they could stop somebody from running if they needed to.
Sure. I mean, this is the problem. This is where we are. This is why our schools are the biggest weapon they have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll
what
say,
do we, what do? We send our kids to the Democrats' basic training. That's what sending your kids to a public school is. And if you send them to college, you send them to advanced training.
I can see that.
Well, I was going to say, as predicted on the Wayne Dupree show, 9-0. Like we said, this would be the ruling. If you read the ruling, the first 14 pages go through a lot of the legal arguments and said it's a federal issue. But if you look at the opinions at the bottom, those are scary for the next case.
That's because,
because the Democrats, the three Democrat justices in their response said, in this case, the courts must decide whether Colorado may keep a presidential candidate off the ballot on the grounds that he is an oath-breaking insurrectionist and then disqualified from holding federal office under Section 3. So that indicates that those three justices tend to side on, and that's what we said, like they weren't going to touch the insurrection thing. The fact the Democrats put that in the ruling, and even Amy Coney Barrett, who might end up being a bad justice, she says the majority's choice of a different path leaves the remaining justices with the choice how to respond. In my judgment, it is not time to amplify disagreement with stringency. The court has settled the politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election. Particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn down the national temperature, not up. For present purposes, our differences are less important than our unanimity. All nine justices agreed. So she's very careful in her language, saying, hey, folks, all we're saying is individual states can't remove Trump. And in the majority opinion, basically, they kicked it back to Congress and said, if you guys want to try to remove somebody from insurrection, write some laws to that effect.
Well, charge him.
Charge him. Impeach him.
I don't think it's a problem. I mean, if they're going to be able to do that, they have to charge him first.
Right.
If you're going to say you have to step down because you're an insurrectionist, who says I'm an insurrectionist? Right. You know, that's the thing. I think what she's doing is what typically Republicans do, establishment Republicans. She's going along to get along.
Right.
She's making sure that she can still come to
dinner. And that happens a lot, man.
It does.
That happens a lot.
But never with Democrats.
Right.
Only with us.
Right. Right. Go along to get. You know what? A long time ago, we used to say the only people in Congress that are worried really about polls is Republicans.
Yep.
They're the only ones that really, and because all I remember hearing all the time was the polling numbers. The Republicans are at the lower, they're at 12% approval, 11% approval, 10% approval. And it's like,
and then they come out for gun control.
They're right.
Want to thank everybody for tuning in, watching us on the platform that you are watching. I am waiting on bait and breath right now because I had a talk on Friday, and we're trying to get us on a network is something that I've been trying to do for a long time, and we're gonna see. I mean, this is the one that's gonna make your jaw drop when when it happens. But that's something that we're worried about. We got Peter Schweitzer coming on at the bottom of the half an hour. He's gonna talk about his new book, Blood Money. You know, and we've been talking about China. We've been informing, educating all of you too about the CCP and what they're up to for last year. So that'd be great too. But back to back to Trump, because Super Tuesday is tomorrow. And Trump only needs, what, 1,215 delegates to win the nomination. I think, and, you know, he swept basically the weekend. He swept everything except for D.C. And you know, he says, well, I didn't campaign there because, you know, they're the swamp. From what I had heard earlier last week or last weekend, D.C. was probably the only one that was going to win. Right. And D.C. is not even a state. So, to me, her Nikki Haley winning D.C., and I really don't want to linger on Nikki Haley too much, but for her winning D.C. just shows that she's won the establishment.
Yeah, so, I think one of the one of the most critical things that they could do for our country if Trump wins is get a badass Secretary of the Interior and come in there and start. You talk about decoupling from the CCP. Let's decouple from D.C.
Right.
I'm dead serious, man. These people go in there, and you can even hear Tucker Carlson even says it. These people go in there, and they work for the government, and they're a slave. All they want is more tax money.
Yep.
There's not a government employee out there that wants freaking tax cuts.
Here's the astounding number about that Haley D.C. win. Population of D.C. is roughly 670,000 people. And Nikki Haley got 1,200 votes, and Donald Trump got 600 votes. So if you think out of 670,000 people, there was just over 2,000 is all that voted. Think of how Democrat that is, hardcore Democrat. And then think of all these people where they're pulling from that jury pool. I mean, for Trump hearings, and some of the leftist pundits were even bragging about that this weekend. I mean, D.C. needs to be just redone.
But see, you know what? That's the issue that I have with DeSantis in Florida, because the Democrats didn't go out to vote. Right. You know how he touted that he won so 20%. Big and stuff? And, yep. Yeah. Like, the Democrats didn't vote. I mean, they cashed in like 6 or 7 months before that. I mean, they took out the money. They didn't back the candidate no more, you know, and they didn't promote anything. And that's what happens, I guess. So, I mean, and plus it's D.C. I mean, they got a whole lot of carjackings going on at the same time.
Right. D.C. is one of the biggest ghettos in America, but it's a scary place if you've ever been there.
Yeah, well,
furniture out in the street.
We were there, and it's worse today than what it used
to be. I'm not talking about like the government part. I'm talking about like a mile, 2 miles away. You start getting out the
right down the street.
Yeah, I went. I had a big giant city map. I took my ex-wife there just to go see the place, right, when I was young. And I laid this map out. I'm like, look, we can avoid all this highway if we go down J Street. It's like 5 miles long. Yeah, that was a hell of a 5 miles.
It's like Escape from New York.
I mean, it was like something out of a movie, man. It was like a liquor store, pawn shop, you know, guys sitting in the street with the bags over the bottles of beer drinking and stuff. It's like, man, let's get out of here.
You know, it's crazy in driving in D.C. because when you're driving past all of the history and everything like that, and the White House and the Capitol and you drive past all that, and then like Huck says, you get to that light, and then you cross over that light, you're like, did I go the wrong way? Yeah.
I'll tell you something.
And then the street narrows down like.
Yes.
I told my wife, don't worry about them lights. If I go, I'm going.
Right.
But you know where else it was like that way?
What's that?
Baltimore.
Well, I know. Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I was in Baltimore. I went to a Baltimore Orioles game
with my wife.
And
yeah.
I walked past. You had a park in this parking lot that was right next to where the Ravens play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, then, you're talking about the new one. Okay, go ahead.
And then I came out to leave, and I'm following the signs for the interstate, and I'm thinking of the wire. I'm going, oh, damn, man, somebody changed the street sign. You know, it didn't seem like I was supposed to be going that way.
Well, Old Memorial Stadium, if you would go there, it was in a neighborhood. It was literally in a neighborhood. I mean, you drive.
That's the way Forbes Field was like that too.
It's like you drive around there, you see houses and stuff, run down houses, and like, ugh, this, oh, you
know? Wrigley Field's like that too.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadly, there's so many inner cities. I lived in Detroit like 20 years ago, and one time we took the wrong exit coming back from Canada. We went to Canada to the casino, and we ended up in Detroit, and we were driving, and the cops pulled us over. And they said, whatever you do, don't stop at these stoplights till you get to 12 Mile. Like you three white boys are not in a safe place. Just keep going. And it was just like Hutch said, you just.
I was in light, Warren. You know. I was outside of Detroit at Warren, Michigan at the Tank and Automotive Command when the, when the M1s came out. And I was there for 3 weeks. And the freaking United States Army told us not to go past 13 Mile.
Right.
You don't want to go down there.
They said that the instructors all said that stay the hell on this side.
Between 8 Mile and 13 Mile, it gets a little interesting. South of 8 Mile, go loaded, baby. That's all
I gotta say something too. And I'm glad you brought this up because I forgot to say it on Thursday. Here's the deal. Many people on social media have been talking about how Democrats have taken over these cities. And many times you've heard me say, yeah, okay, but Republicans let them take it over when they moved into the suburbs. Okay, fine, whatever. I was thinking about something last week, and I was, as a matter of fact, I was thinking about a whole lot of things when I was driving down to see my mom and stuff. But let me throw this to you. Everybody can talk about minorities and the poor white people that live in the city, because they do. Everybody can talk about the policies in the city, okay? But where do the rich people work in the city?
They're the problem.
They right. live in the city. They don't live in the city. They work in the city, yep. Okay? I was thinking about that last week. I was like, wait a minute. We keep hearing about all these downtrodden people that live in the city and they made the city worse and stuff. But you still got the people who work in the city. I mean, and then they go home to the suburbs. Yeah, but they live. I mean, but they work in the city, you know.
You want to hear something about that? The freaking firefighters and the police, the most expensive people that work for the city.
Right.
Don't have to live in the city, and they don't.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah, they would.
And the union's got that for them.
Right.
Really?
Yep.
Because I know it's like that in New York. They live across
the bridge. It's like that in Pittsburgh, too.
They live across the bridge.
Yeah, and actually, if you talk about policing, how much better would it be if to be a police officer in a city you had to live there?
When I grew up, that's the way it was.
Right.
I knew them all.
And that's the deal. If they live in a city and you know the city, people know you, and then they're like...
There's two major things. Right. Two major things they did to destroy the city. They let the police and the firefighter. Well, you know what? I'm not even going to go down that union thing. But here's what happened. Cops used to walk in neighborhoods. Yeah. They used to walk a beat with a nightstick. They could do some crazy stuff with that stick, man. But you'd know them because they'd be in the same beat their whole career. You know, and they'd know you. And they'd come into the pizza shop. The guy said, give them whatever they want. You know, they don't have to pay for anything. It was a different time. Now they're in the car. They don't even live in the city, and they freaking hate you. You know, they're driving around, and they're like in an armored car. They don't even get out of it. They have a thing. It's called park and walk. For 1 hour, they got to park their car and walk around and then get back in the car. And that really dislocated the cops from the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. And the crime is going on up there in Minnesota. You know, we talk about Pennsylvania, we talk about New York, we talk about Baltimore, but this stuff that's going on up there in Minnesota is like third world type stuff.
Yeah, bullshit. It's going to get worse too.
Oh, I got to say, some of the neighborhoods up there.
That was a save.
I know. Go ahead, Jason.
Minnesota is just crazy. Minneapolis, there's parts that you just can't even go into. Stores are closing. I mean, food deserts, all the stuff you hear about. And the legislation passes the stupidest laws. Democrats control the House, Senate, and Governor's office in Minnesota. So right now, the big thing they're taking up is they're requiring all painters to be licensed. So if you want to hire a painter instead of just hiring a painter, you need to, they need to go get certified, licensed with the state. Like, that's what we're going after. Criminals are walking free. There's homeless camps for blocks. There's drug deals. I remember back when I worked in retail, I had a retail store that was in Minneapolis on Broadway Avenue. I took my son there once, and you just observe building security. That's part of what you did in a, like a regional role. And there was two guys on the curb, and he's like, "Hey dad, what are those?" I'm like, "Oh, they're drug dealers." And then sure enough, like 5 minutes later, somebody pulls up, they do a drug deal. And then the kids just stand there and then they drive off. And we stood there like 15 minutes. We just watched drug. And then the cops pull up. "Hey guys, how's it going?" "Oh, good." And then the cops just take off. And my son's like, "They're just doing drug deals on the street." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah. That's just what Minneapolis is."
You must have went deep in there, because
I don't see, baby. That's the hood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if there's one thing I don't do, I don't hang downtown. I mean, if I go to Baltimore, if I go to the city, I'm down there and out, baby. I'm down there and out.
I'm the same way. I don't even like going to Pittsburgh. I don't like paying for parking like that.
Right. Yeah. I used to have stores in the inner city, so I'd have like 8 or 9 stores I'd have to go visit, and those are always the pack your bulletproof vest, don't leave anything in your, like there were times where your car just got broken into, you know, and it was, yeah.
It's a shame too, because I remember back when there was all kinds of stores everywhere.
Right.
It's such a shame what we've allowed to happen. You know, you look at, one of the things that gets me the most is as soon as something gets abandoned or somebody moves out, immediately it gets attacked with graffiti. You know, that there is just horrible. And the other thing is, when I see stuff that's abandoned, I'm blessed here, because back in the 1800s, Pittsburgh was a real big industrial giant. There was a ton of money here, and they invested it in all this architecture, this just beautiful architecture with gargoyles and, you know, just all kinds of different ornate stuff. When you see that abandoned, that hurts, man. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall had like freaking 60-foot ceilings or something like that. You know, real just magnificent stuff.
Damn. So with Super Tuesday happening tomorrow and Trump needing only 1,215 delegates, I guess one of the major questions shouldn't be is, when is Nikki Haley getting in? That shouldn't be the major question. The major question should be, when is Joe Biden getting out? Because opinion after opinion after opinion and the polls that are coming out right now, these things are knocking him down more and more. You know how you hear, if you continue to hear bad news and it sticks to you bad news, that usually the bad news starts to stick and stuff? He's in the toilet right now. I mean, justifiably, he's in the toilet. I don't know about this. I mean, for everything that's happening right now, I don't know how they can say the economy is doing so good when 90% of everything else is doing so bad. And the people on the street can't tell you that the economy is doing good, except for a few undecided, paid undecided people that are saying that, "Oh, no, I'm fine." But for the majority, people not. So when did y'all say that? Did y'all say he was going to make it to the convention, or did y'all say that he was going to get out?
I was going to say, guessing sheet, and Hutch and I both landed on he'll drop out either at the convention or after. You said he would drop out halfway through the primary. That was the original prediction.
I said that.
Yeah, that's what you said. So we're in that zone between, because when's their convention? It's like August or something, isn't it?
July. Yeah, July.
Yeah. So we're in the, Wayne is right. Hutch and I said it would be at or right around the convention, so they couldn't have a primary. And then Hutch thinks it's going to be, initially was Gavin. I said Gavin. You said they're going to roll with big Kamala Harris. I can't wait for Wayne to be right, because I so want.
I know.
I just want to witness a Kamala Harris presidential campaign.
I think Michelle Obama would be nuts if she took it.
Right.
If I was him, I'd get the hell out of the country and keep my head low from now on for the rest of my life.
Could you? I mean, and honestly, that's the way that I've been looking at it. Can you imagine?
No.
How our side. I'm talking about MAGA and all of can you imagine our side seeing that she's going to run and she's not qualified? Can you imagine that? People might start eating crackers and cheese just to donate money for campaign videos and stuff to say how ridiculous. I mean, it is that where America is now?
Right. I can't believe we did it the first time.
Right.
Well, yeah. I got to say, none of these politicians make their own decision. And if the numbers look bad enough, the Democrats, whoever's deciding these things behind the scenes, they may go up to Big Mike and go, "You're in. We got nothing. We're going to have to drop you into this race." And then who knows what happens?
I don't know. I didn't
see it. I mean, it might not be her choice.
No. It's her choice.
I think if you look at the vast amount of crimes that they have committed so far, if I was them, I'd duck.
Right.
I just would. I wouldn't want the scrutiny.
But I mean, that's why, like Nikki Haley, she won't drop out ever because her handlers are telling her not to. The only independent one's Trump.
Jason, mark this down. You said you don't think she's going to drop out, right?
Not after Super Tuesday. I mean, she'll go up to the convention.
Dude, if she... Okay, put this down for me. 12/27. She's going to get out by Friday.
Oh, wow.
I don't think she's got much time left either.
Dude, she's going to get out by Friday. Look.
It's a joke.
This is one of those butt weapons that you got for stealing something or taking something that wasn't yours or lying to your parents when you were really young. And you got that super duper butt whipping of the whole century. This is something that she's getting. She's getting a major butt whipping.
Doesn't matter. She's got her next job lined up at Boeing or BlackRock.
They got millions already.
Okay. Well, right. I can see her going to Boeing, whatnot, but dude, it's over.
I'm not convinced she's not going to run third party. She could be the Democrat nominee, and it wouldn't shock me at this point. She is bought and paid for by the establishment, and she is going to do whatever they tell her to do. That's just how it is.
Long as she got money, Nikki ain't going to... Listen.
She's out of money.
Listen. Now, you can say that. There's a whole lot of people that got money. They ain't got enough money. See, that's as long as she got money. If she ain't got enough money, she getting out. She might have
really hope you're right.
Let her stay in. Who cares?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, we all know that we're all thinking general anyway. Nobody's thinking about this primary seriously.
Well, and it's kind of like when we talk to Peter Schweitzer, like these guys don't make their own independent decisions. These politicians like Nikki. Yeah. Nikki's just somebody wrote her a check. Here's what you're going to go do. Here's how it's going to go down. And they're just going to keep doing it as long as they want to. You know, it's just like the people owned by the Chinese.
Yeah. Coming to the show is a friend of ours. I've been watching him for a long time. He is the epitome of what a journalist should be. And we used to have people around look just like, and I'm glad he's still carrying the mantle, but there aren't a whole lot of people like him is out there right now. But he has a new book out called Blood Money. And again, that, I'm going to get it right after this show. Ain't that right, Pete?
he's sending copies.
Yeah, but the reason why I wanted to have him on is because we've been talking about China, the CCP, because there's a difference. We've been talking about the CCP for a long time, for the last year. As a matter of fact, this month, it'll be a year that we've been exposed to the happenings of the CCP and the difference between China, the Chinese people, and the CCP. And for him to develop this book, and I'm not taking anything away from the New Federal State of China because they do their own thing too. But Ms. Schweitzer is like a bulldog when he's on a topic. You know, he gets down to the Milton Cranny, and we're going to bring him on right now. Mr. Peter Schweitzer, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, great, Wayne. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Let me introduce Hutch Bailey Jr. and Jason Robinson.
Hello, Mr. Schweitzer. Glad to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Great to see you guys. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
You are, if you haven't hit the term legend, you're on your way to it because of your journalistic way that you go about things, really precise. You really get in deep dive, and so when your stuff comes out, books, movies, whatever, when these things come out, you can almost bet the farm that the stuff that you put is real. Now, how did you dive into Blood Money? Give an audience an idea about what it's about, but how did you dive into it?
It's a great question, Wayne. It's always hard to know how you're inspired to pick up certain subjects. I got interested in this because I've looked over the course of the last, 5-6 years, and there's so many things in our country I don't recognize, that I wonder what's going on. I mean, we've had in the past violence in our street, but it seems worse. There's a lot of social chaos. We've got, all these movements like, the trans movement out there. You got people dying of fentanyl in a major way. And I just sort of wanted to try to see what brings it all together. Does anything bring it together? And a lot of these things are, the origins are things that are organic to the United States, right? We've had violence in the past. We've had, conflict, social conflict in the streets, but I really came to the conclusion after looking around more than a year of research that China's doing a lot to fan the flames. And the picture that I have in my mind, Wayne, is, America's on fire. China's standing there with an empty can and gasoline. And our leaders are watching this and they're really not saying much about it. And that's what this, I think, is really about. It's what China's doing. And I go into great detail, but it's also about how our leaders are failing us for, I think, a variety of reasons.
So, Peter, I wonder if you just started dealing with this the CCP specifically during Blood Money, or did a lot of that carry over from Clinton Cash? Because they were also very in deep with the Chinese communists.
Yeah, the CCP angle has been kind of present. I always contrast it with Russia. I mean, I'm not saying that Russia doesn't present some threat to the United States, but Russia's a declining power. I mean, their economy's not in good shape. They've got demographic problems. They're isolated. China's this ascendant power. So they are getting more powerful and have been getting more powerful year after year. I really latched on to the China component because I looked at two big problems we face. One was the COVID. More than 1 million Americans died. I highlight in the book how the CCP actually added to our body count. And then you've got the fentanyl crisis, where it's now the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 45. And as I show in the book, people think of it as kind of, this is what the Mexican drug cartels are doing to us. The drug cartels are really the junior partners. This is a Chinese-run operation, not just from the precursors, but from the money laundering. The drug cartels all launder their money in Chinese state-owned banks. There's 2,000 Chinese nationals on the border in a border town in Mexico. 2,000 Chinese nationals who are helping the cartels take these precursors and turn them into fentanyl. When I looked at those two things and thought, these two events alone are responsible for killing millions of Americans, and they're linked by the CCP, that's what really propelled me forward to look at some of these other issues as well.
Peter, it's an honor to have you on the show. And one of the things I really love about your work is how you try to explain to Americans how this is a different type of warfare that we've seen before. Because we think, hey, if we're going to get attacked by Russia, here's a nuke, here's some sort of, you know, kinetic attack. But China's been waging war on us economically because it's cheaper to buy a politician than it is to buy an aircraft carrier. And I think your work does a does a nice job kind of laying that out. Can you kind of expand on, you know, how deep this goes with our political leaders?
Yeah, the Chinese call it disintegration warfare. And the idea is as old as Sun Tzu, you know, the famous strategist you see quoted all the time online, where he basically said, you know, look, the great strategist is the one who defeats their enemy without actually fighting them. And that, I think, is certainly China's strategy. And when you start to look around at a lot of the issues we face, it becomes pretty apparent. And then the question becomes, why are so many of our leaders, not all, but so many of our leaders non-responsive? Probably the larger group are politicians that are go along to get along. They don't want to make tough choices. They like the perks of the job. They may not have financial ties to China, but they also don't want a heavy lift, right? They want a simple, easy job. And once you accept the reality of what China's doing to us, you can't have a normal relationship with this country. And as I think Wayne pointed out early on, we're talking about a problem with the CCP, not with the Chinese people. The Chinese people are the biggest victims of the CCP. So we always need to distinguish that. But you can't have a normal relationship with the CCP, given all this is true. So that's the larger group. They're kind of go along to get along. But then you have this smaller group. Joe Biden's in this category. Mitch McConnell's in this category. Gavin Newsom, Adam Schiff, where they have what I would call financial entanglements to various degrees with individuals that are involved with the CCP or involved in things like the fentanyl trade that entangle these individuals and make them less willing to talk about these issues. And I think that's a huge factor. If you just look at Joe Biden himself, you know, we reported early on, it highlighted for the first time, the Biden family's money coming from China. What I point out in blood money is it's even worse than that. There's a Chinese criminal gang leader named White Wolf. He leads a gang called UBG, which is widely credited with setting up the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico and making them the kings of fentanyl. They are the they are the worst of the groups. Wow. Well, White Wolf had a business partner. That business partner sent the Bidens $5 million. So does Joe Biden really want to talk about Chinese involvement with fentanyl, given all of that? Heck no, he does not want to. So there are reasons that politicians aren't bringing this up. And for people like Joe Biden and Gavin Newsom, it's very specific and personal. It's because they have direct or indirect ties to the very people that are poisoning Americans.
You know, for everything that we've learned, you're coming on here and confirming a whole lot of things that we've been talking about and learning too. But I guess, have you seen the CC, the Select Committee on the CCP that Congress? What do you think about them? Do you think that's a show type of thing? Do you think anything is going to come from it? That's the first question. And then second question is, the spotlight is on you because of this. What type of brushback have you received because of this? Because right now you are doing some major exposing in your book. And your book have words, and the words carry, you know, a whole lot of weight. So what type of brushback are you getting because of the book?
Yeah, two great questions, Wayne. First of all, with the China Select Committee, I met with Congressman Gallagher, who's the chairman of that committee, a couple of weeks ago before the book came out. I like him. I think his heart's in the right place. The problem is that committee, I think, is designed specifically to be a bipartisan committee. And of course, yeah, bipartisanship is great, except if it leads you to kind of water down the points of emphasis that you are making. And let's remember that this committee was passed by a vote of Congress to be organized. There were a lot of people on the left of the Democratic Party. There were more than 50 of them, Democrats, who voted against this committee even being formed. They don't consider China to even be a threat worthy of a committee looking at. So the Democrats have that constituency they have to contend with. I think the committee has done good work, but I do think that generally speaking in Washington, they're a couple of steps behind. They're very much focused on, one of you mentioned earlier, the cost of an aircraft carrier. They're very focused on the military balance. They're very focused on Taiwan. Those are important issues. But what I point out in the book is the war is already here. The war is already started. There are, you know, there's a large human toll that is already being paid based on what China's doing. They are literally shipping tools into the United States that convert handguns into machine guns, and they're giving them to criminal gangs and drug dealers in the United States. So, yeah, fine, let's talk about aircraft carriers, but focus on this. So I think they're a step behind. To your question about a brushback, yeah, we get lots of brushback. We take a lot of security precautions. I'm fortunate. I've got great researchers. We're not in the heart of the beast in Washington, D.C. We actually have a facility in Florida where we work. We jokingly call it the compound. We've got a big 20-foot fence around it. We've got a lot of concealed carry permit owners here in the office. So, you know, we take precautions and you know, do the best we can, as I'm sure you guys do the same.
Yeah, good for you. I'll tell you, you know, I often think that a lot of times we waste our time trying to focus on like Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, because you're never going to get these guys. And he's going to walk off the world stage pretty soon, one way or another anyway. Mm-hmm. But when you get guys like you've uncovered, like Schiff, and like, you know, some of the, like maybe Mitch McConnell, you know, tell us a little bit about the details on some of these B-level guys that maybe we could get put in prison.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch McConnell, I've talked about him a little bit before we expand on this. I mean, Mitch McConnell does what the Chinese call a big help with a little bad mouth. That's actually a phrase that the CCP uses when they form business commercial ties with politicians in the West. They understand that they've got to criticize China on human rights and things, but they want big help on the big things. And the big things are making sure that China gets access to our financial markets, access to our commercial markets. And Mitch McConnell has done that. And the reason I think so is because back in 1993, excuse me, he took a trip to China with his new wife, Elaine Chao, and his father-in-law, James Chao, who owned a then small shipping company called Formo Shipping. Mm-hmm. And they arrived in China. Mitch McConnell was a U.S. senator by now. They took a trip. They were there as guests of the Chinese State Shipbuilding Corporation, which, as it sounds, is a Chinese government-owned business. It's also the largest military contractor in China. And the Chinese State Shipbuilding Corporation said to the family, hey, look, we will build these big ships for you. You're in the shipping business. We'll build them for you. We'll finance the construction of those ships. We'll provide crews to man those ships. We'll give you contracts to ship goods and raw materials for Chinese companies across the Pacific. And the Chao family said, that sounds great. That sounds good to us. And so it really made the family very wealthy. And Formo Shipping now is a big operation with a lot of vessels. And James Chao has given gifts to Mitch McConnell over the years, one of which was between $5 and $25 million. So Mitch McConnell himself personally benefited from this. And the problem is this makes them dependent upon the Chinese government. And if Mitch McConnell were to say or do something that really pissed off Beijing, they could destroy the Chao family shipping business overnight. So that's the leverage they have on Mitch McConnell. And that's why Mitch McConnell, I believe, will never step out of line as it revolves around China. As it involves Adam Schiff, it's more on the money laundering side of the equation. Adam Schiff had in his district a big donor and a company operating called Allied Wallet. It was headed by a guy named Adnan Khawaja. He and the executives from his company gave Schiff's campaign more than $100,000 in 2016. And Khawaja also opened doors for Adam Schiff. He set up a meeting where Schiff met with a Saudi prince in Beverly Hills at a private meeting. The problem is that even when Schiff was accepting this money, Khawaja was already publicly known to have been under FBI investigation for a variety of criminal activity, including money laundering. And in fact, he was charged with that crime and fled the country. And Khawaja had a partnership with a Chinese entity that was laundering money for Chinese organized crime. Chinese organized crime, of course, is majorly involved in the fentanyl trade. So you can see why a guy like Adam Schiff never talks about China's involvement with the fentanyl trade, talks very little about fentanyl in general, even though in his own congressional district from 2016 to the present, there has been a 1,200% increase in fentanyl poisonings in his district. But he doesn't talk about it, because to talk about it and to talk about China's role in money laundering and everything else would blow back on him. And, you know, politicians don't like to be embarrassed, so they brush this stuff aside.
Oh, Peter, it's amazing. So much of this is similar information to what we see from the whistleblowers at the new federal state of China. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, we're seeing tens of thousands of military age males from China crossing the southern border. And the media rarely touches it. And for us, though, we're putting two and two together going, this is a threat level 10. And in your opinion, how concerned do Americans need to be about that? And where do you see that going?
Well, it should be hugely concerned. I mean, I point out in Blood Money, there was an incident in 2020 where there were Chinese military officials that started working out of the Houston consulate, and they were specifically there to help fan the flames of all the social protests going on, the BLM and Antifa protests. So they've used personnel for disruption before. That's known. The second thing that I point out in the book is there's a huge problem in our country with illegal marijuana growths taking place from California to the state of Maine, and they all have something in common. Over 90% of them are being done by Chinese nationals who are in the country illegally. In the state of Maine alone, there are 300 of these, just in the state of Maine, 300 of them done by illegal Chinese nationals. Yeah. And this is not, by the way, like marijuana from the 1990s that people smoked in college. This is highly potent stuff. It's often laced with fentanyl. It's much more potent than the stuff that's being legally sold. So it's a form of drug warfare on the United States. And this is being done in Oklahoma, California, Washington State, Maine, everywhere. And the common denominator everywhere is the vast majority of these are done by illegal Chinese nationals in the country.
Industrial strength too,
right?
Yes, industrial strength. It's money making, and it's a way of poisoning and targeting Americans with drug warfare, and they're coming in the country illegally.
I want to have you back on. I have to have you back on. But before I do let you go, there's an old saying of. You've heard the old sayings about destroying a country or empire from within or whatnot. Give our audience some last thoughts about what they should be doing and with the information that you have in your book and what they should be looking for to instruct their families or to inform their families about this CCP infiltration that's happening in this country, please.
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, you need to alert everybody you know about the threat and how it exists. In my book, everything's footnoted. I don't use anonymous sources. There's increasing reporting. The mainstream media starts to catch up. I find this whenever I write something, then reports start to follow. So you're going to see more reporting on this, but you've got it. It's a lot of it is looking at what's going on in the world in the right way based on the facts. And we have to stop looking at the threat from the CCP the way that we look at the threat from a conventional military power. That's not how they operate. It's very, very different. It's not a question of we may have a war with China. They are already at war with us. And I would say the second thing is talk to your elected officials, not just members of Congress and the Senate. Talk about local leaders. There's stuff being done at the state level in Florida and Texas, other states, where they're making real reforms. forms about issues related to land ownership, Chinese military entities buying land in states. There are things that can be done at the state level as well, but it's awareness. You have to start with Paul Revere. Paul Revere has to tell you that the British are coming or the CCP is coming. The CCP is here. And then you need to rally the locals. And rallying the locals means alerting people, because I still do believe there are enough Americans that love their country, care about their country. They just are poorly informed by most of the media. And we need to make sure that they know the truth.
And how can people find your book?
You can find the book everywhere. We've been number one on all of Amazon for most of this week. You can find it at, you know, Costco, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. We're getting wide circulation, which we're very thankful for. So pick up a copy and would love to hear your comments. You can go to my website, peterschweitzer.com, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the book and what you think is most important and what needs to be expanded upon.
Excellent. Well, you know what? With all my heart, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Yep, thank you.
I want to have you back on real soon so we can get more back into this, because this has been something that we've been targeting for, again, for the last year. And you have a lot more information that needs to be heard. And I hope that we can be a conduit to that. So thank you so much for you joining the show.
Thank you, Wayne. It's been a real pleasure, sir, and appreciate your voice being out there.
My man. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more from Hutch, J-Rob, and Wayne. We'll be right back.
When I invented MyPillow, my passion was to help each and every one of you. And 20 years later, all of your support is what keeps us going. Because of you, we've been able to create thousands of USA jobs and help millions get the best sleep ever. To thank you, my employees and I are bringing you a limited edition MyPillow. The Giza Elegance MyPillow is made with my patented adjustable fill, the most amazing cotton, and a 2-inch pipe gusset. It has 4 custom loft levels, machine washable and dryable, and you get my 60-day money-back guarantee and 10-year warranty.
Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your limited edition 20th anniversary MyPillow queen size. Retails for $69.98, now only $19.98. That's right, get a queen size MyPillow for only $19.98.
From all of us here at MyPillow, thanks, America!
Instant coffee. Decaf. Latte. Espresso. Americano. Coffee is the second most popular beverage in the world. In United States, more than 450 million cups of coffee are consumed per day. But the top spot for coffee lovers in the world is Finland, where according to International Coffee Organization, each person consumes an average of 12 kilograms of coffee beans per year. But where did our love for this coffee come from? Coffee grown worldwide can trace its heritage back centuries to the ancient coffee forests on the Ethiopian plateau. Today, coffee continues to reign supreme. In fact, coffee is of such importance in human lives no matter where these coffee come from. We can all agree that a good cup of coffee can make our day.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Wayne Dupree, Hutch Bailey Jr., and J-Rob. You can go to splitrockcoffee.com and use the promo code WDSHOW and get your savings off of that. You know, it's kind of funny. Showing the MyPillow commercial to put you to sleep, but then come right behind you and then play the coffee to wake you up.
Wake you up.
So I'm listening to the commercial and it said coffee is the number 2 beverage in the world.
Yeah, well, it's number 1.
Water.
Oh, okay.
I had to check.
I can see that too.
I prefer coffee.
I've been drinking a whole lot of it. And by the way, those that have got the Split Rock coffee, send us your testimonies. What do you think about it? Because I know it's great. I love it. So
I wish I'd have found it earlier when I used to get acid attacks.
Yeah, me too. I did not even know that you get acid attacks from. Man, Bitcoin is at $67,000.
Giddy up. Dogecoin's going nuts too, if you got any of that.
Which one?
Doge.
That one's going up too?
Yeah, that one's going up too.
Yeah, I'm not in. I tried it. I ain't in it. I'm not in crypto.
Stock market's doing good too.
Stock market's going bananas with inflation.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. You know what? What did I hear about houses? There was a expert that said next year something's coming next year because of the economy and the inflation and different things like that. He was like, the houses are already up to 7.5, close to 8% now.
Yeah, you can't afford the money.
Can't do it.
I'll tell you, you know, I know Jason said this a bunch of times, but I saw it written down and it kind of slapped me in the head. We're borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days.
Yeah.
Our debt's going up. That's we're going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not that much money in the world.
I know it's not.
It's something that, I mean, and think about it. Think of what do they keep saying? The Great Reset.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You said, both of y'all said $1 trillion and stuff like that. And you look at it, you'd be like, and we're giving money to a lost cause at a record clip.
Not just a lost cause in Ukraine, a lost cause in our own country.
Right.
The money that we spend in this country on people is ridiculous. It's like the least you do, the more you get.
Yep.
Anybody, it's totally backwards. It's sick.
And there's no incentive. I mean, we all want to help people out that are in a rough spot. Right. You know, let's give you some tools. Let's give you some life skills. Let's give you some support to get on.
And don't get mad with us when we give you that. Maybe $20 or $30, but here's some tools. Fix yourself. Right. Come on, man.
And I'll tell you, I went to the mall this weekend with my wife. I can't believe she still goes anywhere with me because I go out there and I get disgusted, man. I mean, when I'm in a mall in the South Hills of Pittsburgh and some dude is sitting there speaking Arabic on the phone.
Yeah.
Like walking in and out of things, speaking freaking Arabic. I've never seen that in my life in Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? You can tell that they don't give a rat's butt about us because they'd be speaking English if they did.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
My favorite is when you pull up to the mall and then there's the homeless people saying like, oh, anything you can do, God bless. And then you go in and every store has a help wanted sign. And it's like, you know, buddy, instead of standing out here, you could just.
Yeah, I don't have any sympathy. I don't have any sympathy for those people, man.
Right.
They're dead to me.
Yeah.
There's work. There's work everywhere. And if there's not work, make your own work. Go out there and start washing somebody's windows. Right. Go cut somebody's grass. I don't want to hear it.
Well, and that's what, you know, Hutch did a great job of explaining the financial stuff when he talks about, you know, a gold bar 100 years ago was worth this, but you could still only buy 10 loaves of bread. Now, today it's worth 100 times more, but you can still only buy 10 loaves of bread. That's the stock market, folks. The stock market hasn't really gone up because they've created more value. The stock market's gone up because they have created more money. So your money's worth less. And that is somewhat crypto. And that's where crypto is a nice hedge is in gold or any of those, you know, hard assets. I mean, if you have cash in the bank, you're losing. You lost 20% on it since Joe Biden became president.
Let me ask you a question about this immunity thing. Jump on this for a second because should a president have immunity? Yes or no?
Yes.
They should and do.
Okay.
Understanding that they really don't have immunity. They just have immunity from the court.
Okay.
They still have to answer to Congress.
Correct.
They still have to answer to Congress.
They can still be impeached.
But they can't go to jail for it.
If they're impeached, they can.
I don't know.
I mean, that's what the Supreme Court's going to decide. And this is one of those arguments that you shouldn't have. And if you read the Supreme Court's ruling today, it was like, why are you morons trying this? You shouldn't even be trying it.
And to quote Sun Tzu, the way Peter Schweitzer did, an evil old man will burn his own country down just to make sure he rules over the ashes.
Right.
That's where we're at right now.
Right. And this immunity case, that's why Trump didn't lock up Hillary, in my opinion, because Trump has alluded to that. Somebody said, you can't go after your former political opponents. That just opens Pandora's box. But then they came after Trump. So now people don't understand how earth-shattering this is.
We got a dilemma. We have a dilemma on our hands. We got to win, and then we got to reset it back up the way it was before.
The reason why I asked you both that is because with immunity, with presidents having that immunity clause, I'm not saying it's wrong, but then you have to bring in Clinton and Bush.
They got
and Obama in there.
They all got immunity.
Right. So, you know, of all the stuff that we've seen or heard Barack Obama doing, and meaning Barack Obama should be where Donald Trump is, right? Or should have been if we would have had some Republican AGs respond. But since we didn't, if he didn't have immunity, he probably would have been caught in jail or going through this legal process too, if we had Republicans with spines. You see what I'm saying?
I think that we've crippled ourselves because so many people in America don't pay attention to elections.
I know. Right.
You know, we've crippled ourselves with this freaking disgusting Congress we have.
Yeah.
You know, they're never going to, I mean, you couldn't get a bipartisan thing to come out of there.
Not no
way. A real bipartisan thing where the right got a little piece of something.
Not no more.
Well, and yeah, every president in my lifetime could have been charged with crimes when they got out of office, but everybody understood once you open Pandora's box with that, good luck, you know.
And that's what they're doing right now. They're burning the country down.
Right.
You know, this is where we are. I mean, it's going to be hard to get back to a status quo or even forget the status quo. It's going to be hard to get back to something that's legally justified.
Right.
You know, from where we are right now, so many Supreme Courts of states saying that this guy can't be on the ballot because he's an insurrectionist, but he's not.
Right.
And think of that. Think of a state Supreme Court. Think of how much education and how much experience they had to get to that level. And they don't understand something just as basic as that.
Bad is they do understand it.
Right.
They understand it. They're committing crimes. They're burning it down so they can control the ashes.
Yep.
It's despicable.
Yeah. I was like, okay. I know why President Trump wants immunity and why he should have it. But then should we still be complaining about past presidents and what they did?
If we'd have had immunity in Congress, we could have done it the right way with them.
Right.
Right.
But the country wanted that.
Right. And I don't know how many times that I've said Pandora's box is open in the United States. It has been open for the last couple of decades.
Since Obama.
Exactly. Yep. The last couple of decades, the Pandora's box has been open. Who brought it? Who brought Pandora's box into the thing? Probably Herbert Walker and Bill Clinton. But who busted it wide open was Barack Obama and actually George W. Bush, because some of the things that George W. Bush did while he was in office, we look back and like, how in the heck did you just...
Oh, he's no better.
Preemptively attack another country. Nobody ever did that before.
Right.
And you know...
I was going to say, let's paint this picture, though, for the audience. So today, March 4th, Supreme Court comes down. Now I know you can't kick Trump off the ballot. And then in April, in a couple weeks, they're hearing the case about the January 6th, the use of law 1512, Sarbanes-Oxley. The district court came out and just said, you guys way overused this, trying to tone down the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court could rule the use of that law against all the January 6ers was inappropriate, which would immediately overnight free all the January 6ers, because all the trespassing and those charges aren't what they're in jail for. And then you follow that up in June. If they rule correctly where presidents have immunity, can you imagine what the world will look like come August, September, October?
I'll tell you what I want to see. I was thinking about this last night. I read a report last night that the Federal Bureau of Prisons is freaking beaming in high frequency noise in these cell blocks where these J6 guys are. So they can't even sleep. I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, if we pull this out, if we save this nation, I want every freaking prison guard involved in that to be tried. I swear we've got to get control of this. Once you're in that world, I know probably none of our listeners have ever experienced any of this, but let me tell you something. There's a lot of people in federal prison right now, and you could be put there like this, just like those guys were. They went to Washington, D.C., and they walked around with signs, and they followed the crowd in between the velvet lines, and 6 months later, they're in federal prison for 3 years, getting shuffled around, getting diesel treatment. Once you're in there, you have no more say-so.
Well, and you bring up a good point, too. We had Steve Baker on the show a while ago.
Who was getting in trouble
for his January 6th reporting. I mean, he's just a reporter. And last week he got arrested and they handcuffed him and they escorted him into the thing. I mean, they actually arrested a journalist.
Yep.
And even the indictment, if you read it, he was arrested for doing journalism. And I agree with Hutch. Those federal officers that put handcuffs on that man deserve to be in prison.
I'm talking about the guys that are running the prison.
The guys running the prison, torturing these guys. But these folks in these positions of power in these institutions, you are the guards at the concentration camp, and it's going to take some members with courage to say this is wrong. We can't. You see these January 6th guys. You hear stories of what's happening to them. Somebody in that prison needs to be a whistleblower. Absolutely. And they need to come out and say, this is what we're doing to America.
Even if it's another convict, whatever.
Right.
You know, this is...
I'm gonna try to get Steve on because I'd also read some things that... Daily Wire. But I'd also read some things about stuff that he allegedly just said. And I think that's probably what caused some of this thing to happen. But with the journalistic type of side, again, you're bastardizing the freedom of speech to what a person could say and whatnot, and then bringing the FBI to walk them out in cuffs, and they release them later because, dude, honestly, you're gonna put somebody in jail for what they said? I mean, he was taking photos. I mean, if that's the way you really want to be, the jail should be filled up right now for a whole lot of things that people say on social media or on the street.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Let me quantify what I said when I said that this started at Obama, because obviously it started before that. But one of the things that Obama did magnificently and every day of his administration was he filled these agencies with Marxists.
Yep.
Every one of these agencies, I don't care if it's the Department of Agriculture or every single department across the whole government has Obama people in. He took 8 years to do that. Those are the people running the BOP. Those are the people running the FBI, the DOJ, every place. That's and that was brilliant of the guy.
And the weaponization, I tell this story, but I was working in corporate America and I worked with a lot of nonprofits. And you'd go into a conservative one that was facing their fourth audit in 5 years, mm-hmm. and you'd go to a liberal one and you'd be like, how come you guys aren't getting audited? Oh, we haven't ever been audited. And you would just see it just right. And you hear about it, but then, you know, I work with like 20, 30 different groups and I'm like, wow, this just keeps happening. You know, some other federal bureaucracy is going after, you know, some food shelf for auditing their food license and all this stuff.
The beef processor in New York.
Right. Yeah. It is, you know, crazy.
Let me, Jason, you mentioned earlier about Amy Coney Barrett, her thing. I just saw that CNN had something to say
to do that. But I also want to talk about another concurring opinion, and that's from Justice Barrett. And here it's interesting. She doesn't want to sign on to what the liberals are saying because they're arguing that they went too far. She said, in my judgment, this is not the time to amplify disagreement with stridency. The court has settled a politically charged issue in a volatile season of a presidential election. Yes, fair, true. But Laura, that's what the Supreme Court does. They settle volatile questions of national significance. So this quote could come back to haunt her because she goes on to say, particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court.
Basically, I'm only confirming to our audience what Jason has said earlier, that it could come back to later on with the immunity thing.
Well, in the immunity case, the lefties are not going to vote for immunity. So it's going to come down to Coney Barrett and it's going to come down to, you know, one Roberts. Roberts probably. So, and that one's going to be a 5-4 decision, which that, so if you say it and goes 9-0 on the, yeah, it goes to ballot, goes January 6th, and then you get a 5-4 in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's going to be scary.
Yeah. I mean, because it seems like Kavanaugh might not have sided with Coney Barrett in this one, but they've been also, but lately they've been sort of bookends on their decisions together too. So, I mean, last week when I asked y'all where y'all were, y'all said y'all were worried, and I was looking at that, kind of posted that because I said I was worried too. But that was
the decision today makes me a little bit less worried. Not a whole lot, but a little bit less. I mean, these things they gain momentum.
Oh,
I think it could be a better decision than that with immunity. I hope I'm right. I mean, probably not, but I mean, how can you look at Bill Clinton, George W. How can you look at all those presidents and say this guy's different? You know, as a judge, I'm saying, as a Supreme Court justice.
They've been doing that. I mean, because if you look at the 4 or 5 decisions before this one, it seemed like so many have been going. And I know many of our side have not been looking. But if you look at some of the decisions that have been coming out of the Supreme Court or just coming down, I mean, it's some not major losses, it's losses on our side that keep coming down at one after another. And our side has just been quiet, quiet, quiet. Nobody's saying nothing.
That's like I said, I refuse to get happy.
Right.
Yeah, that's what that is right there. It's like, oh man, just be quiet.
Well, here was the thing. From the beginning, I thought this first one would be 9-0. And that's because I thought they would lean in, the judges, which is how it came out, you'd get the lefties to not comment on insurrection, but just say, you can't do this because of voter disenfranchisement. And that's pretty much what the lefty said. But they actually used some of that language about the insurrection in their opinion. And I don't know how the leftist judges can rule on immunity without addressing what happened on January 6th. I can't figure out what angle you could have where they could say, yeah, we won't do this, because I think if you ask them, they believe January 6th was an insurrection. And that's just what they believe. So, and I mean, one of them doesn't even know what a woman is. So, We're not setting a very high bar.
Man.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Let's see. What something came down over the weekend. I don't know whether y'all have heard it or not. But you know, the Roe versus Wade thing, the IVF and the abortion thing we briefly talked about last Thursday. Abortion rates across America is remaining steady based on a new report that just came out. And that's despite the reversal of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court thing. And I think that's it says one of the reasons why is because it's We Count. The thing is called We Found We Count report. And it says that between 81,000 and 88,000 abortions took place between July and September of last year, the most recent period for which survey results are available. Those numbers are slightly lower than the monthly average of 86,000 from April through June 2022. But basically saying that the number of monthly abortions has dropped to nearly zero in states with bans, but they have risen in states that allow the abortions, like Florida. Okay.
Yeah, Florida does.
Ron? Okay. That allow abortion, Florida, Illinois, and Kansas, which border states with bans. Okay. So these people are traveling into these states to get it, you know? And I don't know if y'all remember, but when this came down from the Supreme Court, a lot of these corporations, like, would give you, like, a week. We'll pay you if that's what you want to do. You want to go to another state.
Think about that, man. Think where people's priorities are, man.
I know. We'll give you money to travel to another state.
It's the most important thing to these morons.
Not only that, we'll give you money to travel to get an abortion, and then the military says, well, we'll give you money to transform you into another sex.
How can we not just agree as a nation? Just, you know what, use some sort of birth control. Can we stop it before we make a baby? Like, is this too much to ask? Is it too much to ask to take a pill, get an IUD, wear a condom? Like, for God's sake.
I know.
And if you do get a girl pregnant, man up.
Yeah, right? Well, yes and no. And I was getting ready to go 100% with you.
The key is man.
Well, no, the key is these women. These women get out there and they decide they can make the decision without the guy. Because there are some guys out here who want to be fathers. And there are a lot of liberal women out here like, I'm going to make the decision. And I, because
so stop going to those women.
Yeah, well, and here's the
thing.
Have
you seen them?
Oh, no, I've seen them.
Well, and here's the thing. There's all sorts of victims in an abortion. You know, there's the woman. She's never the same. The man's never the same. The baby obviously is never the same. How about we just wear condoms and take birth control? Like, let's just, and then we quit fighting about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people understand exactly how this pregnancy occurs, but it's pretty simple math.
Yeah, there's two people around at the scene of the crime. So,
right.
You know, so, but yeah. And maybe
take it a little bit more seriously, too.
Right.
Instead of making it just like going to the movies, how about let's think about what we're doing here before we do it?
Yeah, maybe if you're going to have sex, you should say, would I want to have a child with this person?
Exactly.
And if the answer is no. Yeah. Perhaps let's not have sex.
Because somewhere along the line, they added abortion as women's health. So why isn't having sex women's health too?
Right.
And one of the main things behind this, one of the main motives behind this, pretty much worked. It's cheapening life.
Right.
That's what abortion is. It cheapens life.
Yeah.
If you can turn around and kill your own baby, you'll kill anybody.
Well, and if you think of as a parent or as a person, part of your whole goal in life was, how do I make myself respectable to women so a woman will want me? A woman would try to make herself respectable to a man so that the man would want them. And then both would want to have children to carry on their bloodline. And I mean, you've just, that was kind of the foundation of society. And now you've just completely blown all that up.
You destroyed our young women, man. I mean, geez, right? Man, the stuff you see.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. But yeah, I saw that this weekend. And I was like, that really isn't getting any play, but okay, that's fine. San Francisco Giants manager, baseball has started now. The new Giants manager, what's his name?
Couldn't tell
you. I can't remember his name. I saw he came out with no Neil.
Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin used to be with the Orioles, by the way. Yeah, he said, we're going to stand when national anthem is played. We're going to stand. And this don't have nothing to do with politics or patriotism, but he made it mandatory. He said, it's about letting the other side know that we are ready to play. And he said that it's being respectful. So I'm like, good job, Bob Melvin, you know?
Yeah, can we get politics out of sports so you can just watch sports again?
Oh, I watch sports. I might turn the channel when certain things come on, but baseball is back, baby. And the Orioles look like they're doing good already. But it's only preseason, so I'm like.
But just like the Pirates, Wayne ain't got no damn money. You know, they're good up until about, you know, they might even get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, real quick. Texas this morning.
Yeah.
And Georgia already did it, but Texas this morning. Dude, you're illegal. Law enforcement, regular law enforcement can arrest you.
Yep.
You see what they're doing in Arizona. I don't know if it's going to pass or not, but they got legislation in Arizona. If there's an illegal immigrant on your property, you can whack them.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up.
That's what we need to do right there.
Okay. All right.
Cucaracha.
You want some new shoes? Dents.
Those are my shoes.
Those are my shoes, though.
You want some new shoes? Sure. That was some new shoes.
And that's another one. Where just don't let people come in the country without going through the appropriate process. This is a complicated thing, man.
I'm sorry. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it.
I see them on the street, man. I can't stand it.
Newcomers. They call them newcomers now because we did our best to try to tell you that migrant thing that they tried to slip on. They ain't migrants. They're not migrants. They ain't
newcomers either. They're getting ready to go. They just don't know it yet.
Right.
They are newcomers. Y'all.
Don't get comfortable. Don't get too comfortable, guys. Yeah, don't buy nothing on time.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny how stupid the country's become.
Yeah.
You have a huge percentage of the population that thinks just let anybody in. No verification, no qualifications. Yeah. No.
You got the attorney general talking about getting rid of voter ID.
Right. Yeah, I saw that this weekend. They were talking about voter ID, how it's racist. And seriously, of all things, to present an ID for voting is the most logical thing ever. How do you make an argument that it shouldn't just be a thing?
They're burning it down so they can rule the ashes.
Right?
You like that. I like that too.
Have you read Art of War? That's a great book.
Mm-hmm. That's where it came from.
I'm waiting for the movie.
There was a movie about it.
I know. Shogun.
This afternoon. Hey, how's your mom doing, by the way?
Yeah. You know, there's a thing about when you're have a sick loved one that has dementia and gets up in age type of thing. That you might have a family member, and maybe some of y'all can relate. If that family member is always around the sick loved one, they see the sick loved one different than you do.
Yep.
So when I see mama, to answer your question, she's living. And, to me, it didn't look like she was getting better to me. To my sister, she's fine, you know, but to me, because I'm kind of not down there all the time to watch it, I'm like, wow. Because when you lose that type up here, I mean, she remembers old songs that she used to sing in church and stuff, and you know, my sister sings those and everything, and but to see her in that state, it hurt a long time. And that's why I say when I was driving back and forth to Cambridge this weekend, and I was thinking about my mom, and I was thinking about certain things that we do on a regular basis, and I think about some of the things that we say on the show, and I came to the conclusion, or the idea, and you know, we can talk about it later on in the week too, but we've talked about how politicians move the needle, move the goalposts on a whole lot of things, and they trick the American people and they move things. And I was like, maybe it's us that move the goalposts. Maybe it's us that move the goalposts on these politicians. You know, we accept or we reelect these people knowing full well that they shouldn't even be in office, but we move the goalposts to fit them into certain categories to, well, you know, that person's better than this one, so might as well. And that goes against convictions that are true to what we normally believe, you know? And you know, I think about that. I was, you know, I'm driving and I even turned off the music, and I'm really thinking, I'm like, maybe it's not new, but the reason why we're in this situation is because of us.
I don't think we did enough due diligence. You saw a guy come out, the head of the GOP in New York State is a progressive Democrat plant.
Yep.
I mean, he consistently put up poor candidates that would lose. Wow. On purpose.
Yeah.
We've got to tighten our ship up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've created this entire political infrastructure that was never designed to exist in the federal bureaucracy. And then it just gets fed by the minor leagues. You know, people go into state and local and office, and eventually that's where your candidates come from for the federal government. And it's just such a huge money-making endeavor. It was never designed to be that.
And we don't have the ability to fight right.
Right.
You know, I just talk about that New York GOP guy. Think George Santos.
Right.
But you know, with everything you just said, then you add on, and now we've gotten to the point. Yes, I know we're talking about Pandora's box. But what comes with Pandora's box? We're doing things that we had never even that were never done before. There's no precedent set for these things. So you can't say this should happen or that should happen. You're going along with an unforeseen resolution to it. And then you're trying to justify that bad decision or bad result. You're trying to justify that in a way that makes you feel better. I mean, again, we as conservatives, quote, used to talk about not being so feely sensitive, tissue paper feeling type of stuff. I mean, honestly, I really thought we were fighting against that years ago. And this country has become more sensitive and heart. I can't believe they call me this, or I can't believe this person doesn't do this. It's like, grow up. We don't have that much time on this earth, y'all. We don't. We got to get ready to go. We're going to be talking about so much stuff this week, but I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Jason, give me some last thoughts. Hutch, give me some last thoughts, and we are out.
Folks, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share the show. Had a funny experience on the weekend. I went back and I watched the Dee Schneider congressional hearing with Tipper Gore from back in the day when they were talking about explicit lyrics. Twisted Sister was my favorite band growing up. And it was funny. There were two things that I took away from it. One, Tipper Gore might have been right, saying some of these explicit lyrics maybe we shouldn't be making so easy to get to. And the second thing is, I remember when we used to have musicians that actually opposed the establishment. And now it's the opposite.
Yeah, you're right.
And we have no counterculture. Conservatives that go to church are the counterculture. It's insane. We live in a bizarre world. Over to you, Hutch.
All right. Lot going on. Great show today. It was great to talk to Peter Schweitzer. That was a really good catch, Wayne. He's a trailblazer. See you guys tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
My name.